You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Mark Anderson from Washington, D.C. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here, Dave.
Mark, you are in D.C. right now because there are a couple of meetings going on in the nation's capital. Why don't you let the listeners know exactly why you have come into D.C. and what's going on?
Well, as roving editor for American Free Press, I keep close tabs on the Bilderberg Group and its cousin, the Trilateral Commission. And the main thing going on here in latter April 2014 is the annual meeting of the Trilateral Commission. A lesser meeting, but almost equally important, is the Atlantic Council immediately after the Trilaterals meet here in Washington. So by the time May 1st hits, both groups will have met to continue their global planning.
Most people have heard of the Trilateral Commission, and as you've written about over all these years, that was created in, I think, 1973 by David Rockefeller, and I think it was that Brzezinski?
Yeah, Zbigniew Brzezinski, right.
Mm-hmm. How do you say his first name?
Zbigniew, but they call him Zbig for short, like Z-B-I-G, Z like zoo, B-I-G.
Right.
Where he got that name is beyond me, but there it is.
Yeah. You have an article here up on the AmericanFreePress.net website, EU in U.S., Conduit for Bilderberg-Friendly Trade Schemes. And in that, you talk about these globalist groups. You talk about the Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership, also the TPP, which is
correct,
the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I guess the longer name of it is a Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership Agreement.
Yeah.
Or Trans-Pacific Partnership. Is this going to be topic of discussion for the Trilateral Commission?
Very strongly, that's the indication, as is usually the case. And Jim Tucker taught me this as he mentored me to cover Bilderberg. What they do is the members of these groups or their close associates will begin writing articles in the week leading up to their big meeting. And as if on cue, Tom Donilon, a member of both the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, penned an op-ed column this past Monday in the Washington Post. A quick check revealed that he was a member of both groups, and he's talking very openly about the rebalancing in Asia and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And he also mentions another key goal, and that's the planned European Union-U.S. trade deal. And the EU in the U.S. thing that I wrote about in AFP that you just mentioned, Dave, feeds into that. The two trade deals together, the U.S.-European one and the Trans-Pacific one, constitute an enormous share of global GDP. And so the globalists, as I indicate, are on the move like never before. These guys are in sprint, not marathon mode. They know a lot of people are waking up, however slowly that wake up might be. And they're rushing to do end runs around Congress and end runs around public opinion and get everything locked into place before Congress and the people start asking too many questions.
If you go to, for example, Wikipedia and look up Trilateral Commission, it's a very small entry. In fact, there's criticism of the Trilateral Commission from only two sources here that they note. Noam Chomsky, who says that the group had an undue influence in the administration of Jimmy Carter, which is like almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And then Barry Goldwater had criticized the Trilateral Commission.
That's right.
And it says here that there's some folks who accuse the organization of having orchestrated the attacks of September 11th to initiate a new world order. It says conservative and right-wing groups such as the John Birch Society and right-wing conspiracy theorists such as Alex Jones also regularly tout this idea.
Mm.
Is this group really paid much attention to by anyone else other than Jones and American Free Press?
No, not to a great extent at all. Yesterday, a call to the Washington Times revealed that their national policy editor, I believe that was his title, he had no idea the Trilats were even coming to Washington, D.C. this coming weekend at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I found that rather odd. You have 300 people, approximately, that are in the Trilateral Commission, and the word trilateral means North America, Europe, and Asia. You have some 300 major movers and shakers from banking, from academia, from think tanks, from big media that attends but doesn't report, just like in Bilderberg, and lots of current and former public officials from across the globe, all congregating in one place, and the Washington Times doesn't even know about it. I mean, it's one thing to know and say, well, we don't think it's important. That would be bad enough, but not to know at all. And the Washington Times is a reasonably good newspaper in some respects. And so the Post, however, as I mentioned, is telegraphing these sort of cryptic columns by actual Trilateral members that are subtly spelling out the agenda without using the name Trilateral Commission, however. And that's the Tom Donilon column I referred to a minute ago. So I've got more media to call today as we speak here on April 23rd, and some government agencies to call as we speak to see about who's attending, because there could be some key U.S. government officials. They don't necessarily have to be trilateral members to attend the Trilateral Commission meeting. You're going to have members and you're going to have government officials that are collaborating with the members but aren't members themselves. This all has to be sorted out. And so it's a big event. The annual meeting is the one major event of the trilaterals every year, and then they have regional meetings in other parts of the globe as the year goes by, whereas Bilderberg, the granddaddy, has one major meeting per year. But I think it's fair to say that the Trilateral Commission is something of a subcommittee to Bilderberg, maybe not in the formal sense, but certainly in the informal sense.
Mm-hmm. And that hotel is beautiful, that Mandarin Oriental in Washington, D.C.,
yes,
right within view of the Capitol. And they give free internet. That's good. If you want to book a room there, it would set you back a mere $700 before taxes a night.
Is that all?
That's all. But you, like I said, you do get free internet. So that's a good thing. Now, let's see if I'm just curious if there are any rooms available here for the weekend. And there are. You're up to $800-900.
That's strange, because just a few days ago, there were not rooms available. So apparently there's been some cancellations or changes, but of course for the average person that's cost prohibitive.
$800-900 per night.
Yeah, that's saltier than the Atlantic Ocean that they're trying to connect with a trade deal. Yeah, it's quite the spectacle, but it's going to be drastically underplayed by area media. We'll see just what kind of courage the area media has to at least mention this group. You know, if 300 rock stars were under one roof, or 300 Beatle impersonators, I mean, you name any puerile thing you want, fashion designers, if they were all under one roof, the media would be there breathlessly reporting on it. So AFP, we always take the lead in these things, although some with louder voices or more boisterous voices are always trying to steal the microphone. I won't mention any names, but it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to covering it this weekend. And those listeners on the podcast that are hearing this after the fact, this is ongoing. Whatever happens this year is a continuum of what's happened with the trilaterals ever since they were formed in 73 by David Rockefeller, Zbigniew Brzezinski. And yes, they did help install Jimmy Carter in the White House. And moving on from there, the original design of the U.S., North America, Europe, and Japan. Japan has been kind of expanded, and it's now expressed as Asia, including Japan.
This Atlantic Council, is that it?
Yeah.
What's up with them? Where did they come from?
Well, as you know, the tax code provides a way for most people to form tax-exempt foundations. And one of the problems with the Internal Revenue Code, besides just being a onerous way of raking in revenue to pay the debts and interest to the big banksters, one of the problems is it allows the wealthy to park their money outside the tax stream. And so in lieu of paying taxes, wealthy people will build various foundations and charities, and donations to them are tax deductible. Now, that's money that's not going to keep Social Security solvent. That's money that it's not going to keep Medicare solvent. And so they create these tax shelters, and they create organizations such as the Atlantic Council. And they're one of countless groups that have these 501c3, 501c4 status. The very wealthy leverage the tax code. They form things like the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, the Atlantic Council, the Brookings Institution. You name it, A to Z. And oddly, though, by and large, these organizations are all pro-globalism, all pro-one-worldism. There's just a mind-boggling number of them, and they got so much money to burn, they don't know what to do with it. So they form these study groups, these think tanks, if you want to call it that for short. And the Atlantic Council is one of the more obscure ones, but they're all about what they call the transatlantic community. They imagine there's such a thing as the transatlantic community. So apparently they think people that live in the east coast of the U.S., the Atlantic seaboard, have some inherent grassroots organic ties to European peoples. Now, in their roots, in the fact that America is a lot of European immigrants, there's some minimal kind of superficial truth to that. But in terms of everyday life in real time, there really is no such thing as a transatlantic community. This is a construct of the globalists. And so on that basis, the Atlantic Council was formed to be another one of these alphabet soup think tanks to make everybody believe and to pump the propaganda that only by constant transatlantic and international linkages, only by that means can people prosper and lift themselves into the good life. But the entangling alliances and trade deals that they have put forth and proposed and pretty much forced by hook or crook into public policy, all these things have not improved the lot of mankind. They just haven't. And you might find nominal improvements here and there, you know, where a company might do well or a country might do a little better because it's selling exports in another country. But there's other ways to solve the economic woes of mankind. And the path that the internationalists have taken us down has proven to be unwieldy and difficult and has proven to largely result in ruin, and yet they press on. And the Atlantic Council is another kid on the block that we just don't hear about very much. So right after the trilaterals meet this coming weekend, a lot of them, not all, but a lot of them are going over to the Atlantic Council. And in terms of U.S. legislators, your friend and mine, John McCain, the illustrious senator from Arizona, is going to be there at the Atlantic Council meeting.
Yeah, I saw the list of people who are going to be there. It's pretty amazing. Like I said, I've never even heard of these guys. And they were formed, like you said, in the article in 1961, 12 years before the Trilateral Commission.
Yeah, it's amazing. A lot of them happened after Bretton Woods and the World Bank and International Monetary were founded in the waning days of World War II at Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. So a lot of these think tanks rolled out of the post-Bretton Woods era right after World War II, and that includes Bilderberg.
And Bilderberg is happening next month?
That's right, in late May in Copenhagen, Denmark, according to their own posting. So that's when they're meeting.
Okay, is it Copenhagen or Copenhagen, however you say it?
Yeah, me giving it the old American pronunciation.
I don't,
maybe
I,
it is Copenhagen.
I don't know how to say it. But is it definitely in that city?
Well, I'm not going to say definitely. It's in Denmark. There's not a whole lot of places you can meet in that small country. The hotel where they're purportedly going to meet, a Marriott in downtown Copenhagen, Hagen, tomato, tomato, is not really fitting with the usual profile of the snob of snobs, that being the Bilderberg Group. It doesn't have the golf course. It doesn't have the countryside, highly exclusive setting with ultimate privacy. It lacks a lot of the basic trappings of hotels they've met at in the past. So I have my doubts about the big Marriott in downtown Copenhagen.
So besides the usual suspects, Bilderberg Group, they don't really even have a name, right? It's just like an informal gathering. They don't call themselves Bilderberg Group, right?
Yeah, that's tricky. The Bilderberg meetings, meetings with a capital M, meetings plural, is what they call it. It's less of a group and more of a conference. That's true. Let's get that fact straight. But since the grouping for decades has involved a core group of the same individuals, then it's loosely called the Bilderberg Group because Henry Kissinger's there every year. David Rockefeller, although he's getting way up in age, is there every year or most years. You have this core group of the usual suspects. So there is a group, but it's primarily a conference.
Right. So besides the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations and now the Atlantic Council, how many other prominent or even behind-the-scenes globalist groups are there, actually?
Well, like I indicated earlier, there are dozens. There's the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, or WINEP. They're very neocon. They often have things that sound very much like they want to keep the U.S. on a war footing. Then you have perhaps the most significant among them now is the Brookings Institution, which is right across the street from the Peterson Institute for New Economics. The Peterson Institute was founded by Peter G. Peterson, who for a long time was a key member of the CFR, and he's been with the Trilateral Group. The crossbreeding, the cross-pollination among these groups is amazing. You know, it's almost as if they're one colossal think tank with different branches and departments. You find so many of the same people and the same organizations represented in all of them. But the Brookings Institution always has somebody at Bilderberg and always has somebody at Trilateral.
Mm-hmm.
So the Brookings one is a pretty important one, and that's where I first heard about a year ago, April. That's where I first heard about the U.S.-EU proposed trade deal and got what amounted to be an exclusive for AFP at the time. And as night follows day, that trade deal and the transatlantic one throughout the year have been espoused by different globalists meeting at different places. The NATO Secretary Rasmussen speaking to the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, praising all these trade deals, praising all these same things. So you hear different people speaking to different organizations, all speaking the same language, all reading off the same agenda.
Right, globalese. Yeah, I actually met old Pete Peterson many years back over at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York City. Interesting fella. Interesting history, this guy. I mean, how he made his money. I believe it was with Blackstone Group.
The Blackstone Group, right. They've proposed a lot of austerity measures. A recurring pattern with these guys is it's austerity for the lower classes and prosperity for them.
Yeah,
and there
fair.
Seems to be an inextricable link that one means the other. For them to prosper, others must not. They won't tell you that explicitly, but it's always austerity for the masses and free trade and free markets and neoliberal capitalism for them. We don't want any restraints. We don't want any regulations. Get rid of Glass-Steagall. Antitrust laws are cancer. This is how they think.
And we get bread and circuses.
Included, yeah.
Yeah.
And $900 hotel rooms.
Wow.
And free internet.
Well, don't forget about that. Like, they would even recognize that. It's funny that they even put that up on their website, free internet. What a joke.
Yeah, that's big of them, right?
Yeah. So, here, you're going to be heading out to Bilderberg coming up next month. Any way that American Free Press listeners, supporters can help out in that regard?
I'm glad you brought that up, Dave. As Trilateral comes around here in late April and Atlantic Council, there's going to be a very dynamic time here coming up in May with a lot of planning and a lot of research to prepare for Bilderberg. And I would ask listeners to consider making a donation to AFP for any reason you want, of course, and keep subscribing if you're already subscribing and buy a subscription if you're not, but to also consider throwing some in to help support AFP's efforts in covering Bilderberg. Please help us get to Bilderberg and keep our bills paid. Whatever you might want to give, whether it's $5 or $50 or whatever your heart desires, send anything you want. No donation is too small, and maybe it's accurate to say no donation is too large, but certainly no donation is too small. I'm taking somewhat of a lead in that since Jim Tucker, the late great Bilderberg hound, God rest his soul, he died almost exactly a year ago. I think 3 more days will be the 1-year anniversary of
That's
Jim's
right.
passing. Again, God rest his soul, rest in peace. But he entrusted me with a significant part of this, and I would ask in his memory as well as for our current efforts, again, that listeners consider making a donation. You can call AFP at 202-544-5977 Monday through Thursdays between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. That's 202-544-5977. And you can also email us. I don't know if you have the emails handy, Dave, or other ways that they can reach you or reach the paper. You might share that now.
Yeah, sure. What you could do is you can pop an email over to, real easy, dave@americanfreepress.net and reference that you heard Mark during this podcast interview and that you'd like to make a donation. And I will then forward that email over to the appropriate person.
Very good. Yeah, and I will assure listeners that it's money well spent to keep up the coverage of not just Bilderberg, but these preliminary groups. And that's where I think we're strong, Dave, is that a lot of people have said, okay, you know, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Tucker, and so on and so forth, you know, you're focusing on Bilderberg. We even had some letters to the editor in our hard copy version recently where, you know, you guys got to be careful that Bilderberg may not be the only game in town. Well, we're responding to that. We've been proactive on that. We're looking at obscure groups like the Atlantic Council and the European Union delegation to the U.S., which is one we haven't even mentioned yet in detail, and the Trilateral Commission. So we're responding to our readers. We're not just looking at Bilderberg. We're looking at a myriad of groups. And that includes this EU in the U.S. movement carried out by the delegation of the European Union to the United States, which was recently on the front page of AFP in our response to these reader concerns. And that shows that because Congress is a little slow at the switch, a little slow for the taste of these impatient globalists, they're now sending delegations to collaborate with the Austin City Council, to collaborate with Kansas Governor Sam Brownback. They've already visited with him. They're plying the promotion of the EU-US trade deal at the local and state level in the U.S. This is how concerned and aggressive they are. And we are paying attention to all of it. I am on this 1,000%.
Well, you do speak the, like you've used in your articles, the global ease. And that's important because this isn't just a niche, but it's a whole new language here, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Because of their tax code privileges, 501c3, 501c4, and the fact that many of them are constituted as tax-exempt foundations, they do have to have some degree of their meetings and conferences and events open to the public. So the Chicago Council on Global Affairs or the Brookings Institution will have a certain number of their programs just open to the general public. And they'll have the NATO Secretary General speak. And, you know, the press will come to those small meetings. But when it comes to these big meetings, they don't. But global ease, Dave, you bring up a great point. Our friend Tom Donilon, who wrote the op-ed piece in the Washington Post here in the run-up to the Trilateral meeting this weekend, Donilon believes that the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Deal, its most important aim is strategic, quote unquote. And then he adds that what this means is it would, quote, solidify U.S. leadership in Asia and put the United States at the center of a great project, writing the rules that will govern the global economy for the next century. Now, when he says put the United States at the center of a great project writing the rules, what he means is by way of trilateral commission recommendations and policy papers and private influence from behind the scenes, by way of that, the U.S. will write the rules that govern the global economy for the next century.
Right, outside of the representatives in Congress.
Or in such a way where the trilateral influence will be hidden. And then Donilon went on to write in his Post column, quote, that the trilateral vision of this TPP will, quote, incentivize the spread of free markets and liberal economic principles. Now, when they say free markets, they don't mean what you and I think. They mean where there's an unimpeded global commercial and financial and trade system that doesn't have to answer to any political or public concerns. There cannot be any antitrust laws. There cannot be any what you and I would consider common sense regulation that would in any way impede on the fortunes of the major investors of the world.
Laissez-faire.
Complete and total laissez-faire. And then when they say liberal economic principles, yeah, they mean liberated from scrutiny. So we all would like free enterprise. But this isn't free enterprise like the mom-and-pop stores having not too high of taxes and reasonable regulations to make a living off their mom-and-pop store or a small industrial concern or something. This is about what the late great Father Coughlin talked about. You know, this is monopoly capitalism, which has more in common with communism than it does the real free market, the real free enterprise.
Right. That's what I was going to bring up. Here you got this David Rockefeller. Now, is he the son or the grandson of John D. Rockefeller?
Grandson. There was John D. and then there was John D. Jr. They called him Jr. for short. He founded Rockefeller Center in the 1930s in New York. And then he had five kids, and David is one of them.
Right. So really, here, what they're saying is, let's do what John did, John D. Sr. did, which is create all these, like you said, monopolies, these trusts. This is what these guys really want.
Yeah, it's all trust building, so they don't want any trust busting going on.
Unbelievable. You would think that these traders in D.C. would have learned something or would have some respect for history or for the citizens of this once great nation, and they would make sure that nothing like that ever happened again, because it's been proven that that stuff harms your average, hardworking, middle-class American, right? I mean, is there any doubt about that?
No, not at all. The ideal economy would be one where a nation produces mainly for its own consumers and only exports its surpluses, and the recipient countries would only import those things that they cannot make or grow for themselves. If you had a country that was all desert and could not grow crops, then it would have to import some crops. But to the extent that it can begin growing crops, then it would reduce its imports commensurately. Each nation should be at least semi-autonomous, but what these things want, what these guys want, maybe things is the right word.
I think so.
Is where no country can be fully autonomous or nearly autonomous, and they're all interdependent. And they always play the middleman and charge their tolls going either way that the goods and services and raw materials are going, always having to make money in every transaction. So it's this huge, absolutely colossal scheme that keeps the central banking and central trading regimes alive. It goes back a long time, of course. We won't get into the ancient history of it, but these things did not happen overnight, and that can be another discussion. But it's very interesting what's going on. I guess we're privileged in a way to be witnessing it. It's hard to stop, of course, but AFP, however humble it may seem, is doing its best, I think, in taking the lead, even though a lot of other media in this age of the citizen journalist with his iPhone and his other devices, we've still managed to take the lead, I think, in most of these cases. Bilderberg is getting to where there's an incredible amount of alternative media there, but I think that what AFP's done is we've spread things out to cover these other groups in such a way where we present a much more complete picture than the other alternative media.
Yeah, absolutely. It's undeniable. I'm glad you elaborated on the trusts and how they operate, because I think that's really the crux of all this.
You know, I'll mention, Dave, in passing, one historical footnote comes to mind. You know, a lot of times people get the idea that the Rockefellers are not aggressively evil or something like that. And maybe in some respects, people will argue, well, it's not like they're Babyface Nelson or Al Capone or Meyer Lansky or something. But if you examine the history of the Rockefellers, you not only see cutthroat behavior early on by John D. Rockefeller Sr., by the original oil magnate, ruthlessly stomping out competition, not by merit, but by force, and by rigged markets, the same kind of rigged markets that the internationalists seek now. But John D. Rockefeller Jr., David Rockefeller's father, seemed like the most urbane, benevolent guy you'd ever want to know about, right? Well, there was the Ludlow miners' strike in Ludlow, Colorado. And just to get a little snapshot of Rockefeller, since he helped found the Trilateral Commission and since he's been a big mover and shaker at Bilderberg and the Council on Foreign Relations. So Rockefeller's father, Jr., owned the main interest in the Ludlow mine in Colorado. Well, there was a strike there. And just like his father before him with Standard Oil, strikers were met with extreme force. So this illustrates the Rockefeller view of the common man. John D. Sr. would have his workers, if they would go on strike, physically worked over in a big way. But John D. Jr., his son, again, the father of David, when the Ludlow miners had their strike, they were gunned down by the U.S. Army. Men, women, children, gunned down by U.S. troops. Interestingly, Dave, the Ludlow Massacre was almost exactly 100 years ago. Here I'm speaking April 23rd, 2014, and the Ludlow Massacre occurred on April 20th, 1914.
Wow.
And that's quite a timely thing to acknowledge. And of course, we want to acknowledge the people that gave their lives fighting the Rockefeller machine, because some two dozen people, including women and children, were killed. And the chief owner of that mine, as I noted, was John D. Rockefeller Jr.
That's very important. Very important. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is, again, we could be talking about some esoteric groups, but when you tie in the ruthless history of these groups, then, like you said, the guy appeared to be, you know, the sweetest guy in the world, but when you actually can peel away the onion and see what these people are actually responsible for, these are nasty, nasty, greedy people.
Right. And ultimately, it's because government has failed to do the most fundamental thing that we have governments for, and that's to prevent the concentration of power in any one sector of the world or of the nation. You cannot allow any one sector of people or any kind of class or any kind of segment, whatever you want to call it, to take the reins of a majority of the economy, or the worst thing, to allow them to control money or the creation of money. The purpose of government is to prevent the concentration of power and to create a level playing field and then largely leave people alone to pursue their destinies. But when government allows any private combine or trust or something like that to unreasonably assume some sort of control, societal control, then government itself is subverted and becomes not a shield but a sword against the people. And this is what we have.
Mark Anderson out of Washington, D.C., thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to speaking to you after your stay in the Mandarin Oriental Hotel.
Yes, I've got that money handy right here. I've been saving for 10 years.
With our friends, the Trilateralists, and then, of course, prior to Bilderberg, and then, of course, we're going to have plenty of coverage, live coverage from Bilderberg when you're out there next month.
Great. Mark. Thanks, Dave.